For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line podcast network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now.
This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins the national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
Do you want to watch the Morning Rush, Halftime, Even, Ruskin, and Zach? Find our live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, X, Instagram, and Twitch. ESPN Arkansas, more than just radio.
Good morning and happy Thursday. Good to be with you today, 1 minute after 11 o'clock in the morning on ESPN Arkansas and HitThatLine.com. It's Halftime. I'm Phil Elson. Good morning, Matt Jones. Looking pretty once again. I don't see Christian Johnston, but I'm guaranteeing he doesn't look quite as pretty as you do today. And happy Copa America Day 1. I know the U.S. doesn't get started until Sunday against Bolivia, but our football stadiums across the country are turning into football stadiums of different type today. Got Argentina and Canada playing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta later on tonight. So I know you got to be pretty fired up as you watch the Euro 2024. And now you got it on the other side of the pond here.
Keep it in your pants, Phil. I know I look pretty, but just keep your hands to yourself. Did you take a shower today? I know yesterday you said you didn't shower. We're not in the same room, so it doesn't matter as much to me. But can I smell you from here, or are we good?
You raise my armpit. No, I did shower today, so you wouldn't smell.
Yeah.
Got outside. Actually, got outside for about an hour-long walk, so I'm going to tell you what, it's warm enough where you would have been able to smell me through the iPad if I hadn't showered.
I just talked with your boy Quinn and Coach Z for the last 30 minutes. So that was kind of getting the jump start and getting the juices going.
Hey, you're working early
today. I feel like I'm in hour two already. So
now that's an unpaid interview that you did too.
You know, those cats right there, you couldn't ask for two better cats to sit around and chat with. I mean, the only thing is they just talk so highly about you. It's like, quit giving Phil such a big head. You know, it's like Phil Elson's the best. It's like, I mean, he's going to start believing that if you keep lying to him, just like I start believing I'm pretty when he keeps lying to me every day.
All you got to do is sooner or later, you got to have somebody that sets you straight about the person that you're talking about.
That's right.
There will be somebody comes to me that tells me that you are not as pretty as I tell you are on a daily basis. And, hey, I'll be the one to tell you that if Quinn and Zim view me in a positive light,
then you're winning.
You know reasons to look for the other direction.
Yeah, right.
Maybe more so than they do.
Absolutely. No, but it was a good chat and got to relive some old memories and, chat for a little bit and those two big. I like both those guys, so pretty cool.
I'm sure they tried to get. Did you guys talk about Hall of Honor?
That's what it was. It was 30 minutes of that, and it's always weird when you're talking about yourself, but it's a thing where it's a team sport that you play, and then you get individual honors. And you know, I never played for individual honors. You play for the team and you play to try to win. And I go back to something my dad said at an early age, and every coach I've ever had said this. You take care of the small things, you pay attention to the details, and you do that well, the big things, the awards, the champion, all that type of stuff, that'll come afterwards. So just make sure you take care of the little things, and that's what you can control what you can't control.
Well, what, if I may be so bold, because I did watch you play at Arkansas, and I think one of the things that you also did while you were trying it, while you were playing, and I don't know if this is something your father had told you as a coach, or if he just told you this as a father, or maybe he didn't say it, but it is something that I believe when I watched you play is I think you'd enjoyed playing. I mean, I think you were out there having fun. You know, you took it serious because it was a job, and I think you might have viewed it that way at Arkansas too, but why would you do it if you don't enjoy it? And I think you played with a lot of joy. Just like, you know, when I'm in the booth with Zim and Quinn for football games, you know, Zim is one of the spotters. I'm the other spotter for Chuck, and I'm hosting pregame. And Quinn, of course, is up there in the booth for the game. And everybody's having fun. You know, I don't know why you would do it. You want to get paid, sure. We're professionals about this. But why do it if it's not fun? And that's what Quinn and Z do on the Razorback Daily, too. I'll tell you that. So another thing, too, you could take some notes from Quinn about talking about himself. The guy made a movie about his life and his family, so he knows what that's like. But, he never does it in a way that makes it seem like he's, grandstanding or anything like that.
No, he's a class act, that's for sure. And I want to say the last time he came on, I think maybe you were doing a baseball or something, he came on, and he did a great job. It's I always give Quinn a hard time. I say when I first got there, I looked at all the records, and I said, "What's the best quarterback in rushing? It's Quinn Grovey. What's the best? I was like, those are the records I want." And he's like, "Well, you got there." I said, "Well, Quinn, I didn't quite get to 10 wins like you did, though. That's what we were trying to do. It wasn't about the individual things. It was about trying to get your team to 10 wins." And Quinn was he was a great one to do it, and had back-to-back 10-win seasons there for the Hogs right before we came over to the SEC. You have to have a feeling with Quinn and the way he was running that offense that probably helped Arkansas get into the SEC, being able to win back-to-back 10-win seasons and all the success that they were able to have.
Yeah, Quinn still keeps that competitive fire going by being a dominant Madden football player. So I would also assume that he's going to get in on EA Sports College Football now that it's being released once again. So I know you're not a video gamer, so you still keep those competitive fires out there, though. Do you play FIFA?
I used to. I used to play it religiously. No question about it. It's been a couple years I haven't. But the golf course, I guess, mm-hmm. is the and grocery shopping. That's the if I go to the grocery store, I'm going to get better groceries at a cheaper price than you. That's one thing we talked about too, Phil. It's funny you bring that up. Competitors compete. You either have it or you don't. It's from a young age. Whatever you're doing in life, you're always competing to do the best. And
love this.
We got into the radio show talking about the job now, and I said, I don't know that I'm very good at it, but I know I'm gonna compete, and I'm gonna keep trying to get better. And you go back and not necessarily like the tuna does, go back and listen to the tape, but you go back and. If you think about a year and a half ago or even back at the buzz at the other place, you just hope each year you're getting a little bit better.
Tuna is definitely competing with, take your pick, with Eddie, with Cecil, with Greg in Farmington, probably with Brian in Ozark too. I think Tuna, why else would he self-scout his phone calls on the show when the Eastside Liquor halftime podcast
comes out?
Competitor,
that's right.
He is a competitor, and I can appreciate that. I don't know if I view myself as being very competitive at all. I just want to. Here's what I want to do, and if this leads to beating somebody for anything, but I'm not really competing for anything. Like the ratings, we don't really look at the ratings very much. I just want to do the best that I can, live up to whatever talents I have, and maybe supersede those a little bit, and enjoy what it is that I'm doing at the same time, which I do enjoy. Grocery shopping every once in a while, Matt, and I think maybe you and I, like, who are you competing against when you're the idea of competitive grocery shopping outside of maybe it being a game show or some kind of a shopping spree? There used to be a competitive shopping show that I'd watched. I don't know if it was a grocery
sweepstakes.
Maybe you and I can go receipt for receipt sometime.
That was one of the coolest shows. It was definitely in the 90s, Phil, but I was like, I would be the best at that. They get a buggy, I guess it's called a buggy, and you just run as fast as you can down the aisles and get as much food as you can. Yeah, I think
the thing is, you got to finish the food too. You and I, competitive eaters, I'm not too sure about that.
Well, I'll tag Joey Chestnut in. It will be he'll be my teammate. And we'll
hey, how about speaking of, now that Netflix is getting into all things involving live sports, eventually they're going to, I think they're going to be streaming an SEC game or two every once in a while. But did you see that the hot dog eating contest that Joey Chestnut is banned from because he has he's a spokesperson now for Impossible Foods, and the Nathan's Hot Dog Company is not going to let him compete. So he and Kobayashi, I think, are taking each other on Netflix. So Netflix is the place where you'll see a fight that nobody ever thought, well, you never would have pictured Tyson against Jake Paul, or I guess Tyson against anybody for that matter right now. That's in November. And I think, I don't know when they're doing this hot dog eating contest, but it's on Netflix again. Netflix equals sports, and it doesn't just equal documentaries or anything like that. It's live sports.
Your boy, Jake Paul, you bring that up. I think he's going to fight on the Canelo, the Zone, the Canelo channel that when he started that, but he's going to fight a bare knuckle champion who's like 8-0-1. This is, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I wonder if it's still
it's like Rocky versus rouse. Thunderlips all over again.
Man, a bare knuckle champion. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
You ever watch any of those slap fights? Do you ever see slap? Now, I don't like subscribe to it, but I've seen it. It's popped up on TikTok every once in a while, and I'm thinking to myself, so this is what society has come to. I hope they're getting paid well. Are you allowed to show up 7 or 8 beers into one of these things and allow yourself to get slapped in the face?
You've seen the movie Looper, where he's like, it doesn't entertain the smartest people don't sign up for this job. I think it's something like that. I don't think the smartest people are signing up for
that. You're going to be losing IQ points with every slap.
Oh, my. I saw a dude hit and his whole side of his face swelled up like a grapefruit, and you're just like, man, for that $17, that was...
You know, there's people over there that's like, yeah, that's what we're looking for. Way to go. And those were the people in his corner. Just imagine that. It has now taken me 11 minutes to finally get to Texas A&M versus Tennessee in the College World Series Finals. Now, this is what I expected. It is no surprise. Everybody's like, all right, so who are you going to pick to root for here? Do you have to? Even if you're going to watch it. Even if you're going to, like, I'll watch this because I think this is going to be a spectacular series. I think A&M and Tennessee, these are the two teams that should be playing each other. They are the best constructed teams. They are the most balanced teams. They're also the most fearsome teams with the way that they're able to score. And I think it's going to be a great series. But I can't root for either of them. I feel like I need to have a rooting interest in order to watch a lot of games. I don't have a rooting interest in this. Maybe a personal interest just in the guys on the Tennessee coaching staff that I got to know when they were coaching at Arkansas, but I don't know if I'll be pulling for them or if I just think I'd like to see a 3-game series that goes 20 innings in the third game. But it's how many Razorback fans out there are going to, even the hardcore baseball fans, are going to watch this and take a rooting interest. And if you take any rooting interest in this, how do you choose one of these schools over the other? Because it's distasteful to me either way. You know, and I don't root for fans. I will root against some fan bases because of how distasteful they come across sometimes. Outside of that, it's two teams that have never won a College World Series that, I mean, A&M has been kind of, I think, knocking at the door a little bit here and there. Tennessee certainly too in the last few years under Tony Vitello. But these programs also were built to last. So I'm not rooting for any of them. I think there are some people listening right now that might have stuck their fingers in their throats when they saw what this series would be, and you can't be surprised. You can't be surprised by this. These are the two teams that, truthfully, I think were playing best near the end of the season. They both look really good in Hoover and have been pretty darn dominant in the postseason, too. Heck, A&M's undefeated. A&M is undefeated going into the College World Series Championship, which is the first time a team has done that in 9 years. But I think they'll lose one. I think this is going 3. I think it'll be a great series. See, Matt, I delayed that on purpose. I think it's going to be a great series, but it is a series that still just like bums me out because here it is, another first-time champion out of the Southeastern Conference, and one of them is a program that Arkansas was
like an inning away from winning a series on the road at College Station in the middle of May. And the other is a program in Tennessee that Arkansas swept last year. Didn't get a chance to play them this year, and I don't know how that'll go in. But it's one of those things that just felt to me, it felt inevitable when the College World Series started, but when the tournament started, when the 64 teams got going, I think these are the two best, and here they are. I guess I should just be happy that I think we're seeing the best of the best out there instead of some Cinderella getting up there and maybe getting blown out a little bit. Because I don't think there's going to be any blowouts.
Well, I mean, it's the one thing I guess you can say, Phil, that you won in some of these tournaments. It doesn't. It's a lot of times, I'll just use basketball, for example, March Madness. A lot of times that championship game isn't between the two best teams. And so sometimes it can be lackluster or whatever. But the fact that you got the two best teams up there competing for the championship, that's pretty cool. I guess that's the only good thing you can look at.
Here's what we got on halftime on a Thursday. We got three guests coming up, including Brett Dolan in a couple of hours. You never know where Brett is located, so we'll see if he's on the – probably is on the road somewhere. Danny West from the 24/7 Sports Network, hogsports.com, will join us, getting into Arkansas football recruiting in about an hour. And after this quick break, we are joined by Bob Holt from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. So stay with us. Halftime is back in just a moment.
This is Halftime.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Eastside Liquor has every alcohol you need as we get close to summer. Green River Bourbon and Rye is flying off the shelves right now. Come check out the new Crystal Ridge Moonshine and Vodka, made right here in Hot Springs. Eastside Liquor, 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
Are you ready to give your family the best 4th of July experience yet? USA Fireworks wants to make that happen. Go to hitthatline.com/USAFireworks and enter for your chance to win a $1,000 fireworks show. It's $1,000 wholesale fireworks worth more than $2,000 retail. Again, hitthatline.com/USAFireworks. The USA Fireworks banging giveaway, courtesy of USA Fireworks, ESPN Arkansas, and hitthatline.com.
Should start with Bob.
It's time to talk with the unique individual.
You said you and Diva are OGs, old guys. Brett, you spoke so positively recently. I mean, did you expect this to happen?
He's a man of mystery.
Why do you always talk about Arkansas? But go ahead.
Well, why do you always talk about Kentucky?
Hey, it's Bob again. I think I'm unmuted now. I figured it out.
Man, you win the lottery three times, get to go to Starkville.
A man whose incisive questions and rapier wit.
Hey, John, but I had a two-parter if that's okay.
What did you mean? I'm sorry. I'm not that good.
Man, we got to get the Packers straightened out. Listen to the Jets. That ain't in Lambeau. That ain't good.
That placed him on the Mount Rushmore of Arkansas sports writers.
What do you think about this?
Sure, Bob. The future in that. Yeah.
Here he is, the one and only Bob Holt.
Hey, guys.
All guests join us on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, and the one and only Bob Holt with us, as he usually is on a Thursday. Hey, Bob, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. Do you ever take a rooting interest when you're watching college athletics in games that don't involve the Razorbacks?
Sometimes I do. It kind of depends on if I know people involved or maybe what my interaction with them has been like. Generally, I just like to see good competition. You know, I don't think, unless you have a rooting interest, you really don't want to see lopsided games. But yeah, so sometimes I do, or maybe you root for a storyline or something like that, or, you know, there's some human interest element to it.
I mean, I'm rooting for myself when it comes to the Major League World Series, just because I want to see the thing go seven games and go extra innings in the last game, because I don't know what the heck to do with myself outside of that. When it comes to the College World Series, I think I probably do more rooting against than rooting for when it involves SEC teams. So I'm trying to work out in my head here who to root for between Tennessee and Texas A&M. I know guys on Tennessee. I like the radio guys for both clubs. I could do without both fan bases for most of it. I don't know who to pull for here. Are you rooting one way or the other?
I think I'd probably like to see Tennessee win because Tony Vitello was here. I like Tony. I know he draws a lot of strong emotions from people. Some people love him. Some people maybe think Tennessee's a little over the top. But I always liked Tony personally. I do like Tony personally. I think he's a hell of a coach. He's been very adamant that Dave Van Horn really helped his career, hired him and bringing him here, helped him get the Tennessee job. Obviously, Tony's taken that and run with it. But he helped Arkansas get to a World Series. And you got, you know, some other guys there. Josh Elander was here at Arkansas. And, of course, Tony's a Mizzou, a true son, a true Tiger from old Mizzou, from St. Louis. And so, you know, I know Tony personally. I'm not saying we're best buds or anything, but my interactions with him have always been positive when he was at Arkansas. And talked to him a few times since he went to Tennessee. And but I really like Tony, and he's a Mizzou guy. So now, if I was covering the game, I'd have to be neutral. But if I'm just watching on my couch, I'm go Rocky Top, you know?
That I couldn't. Even if I'm rooting for Tennessee, I'm not going to go with the Rocky Top thing. Cause yeah, if you go there, you know what it's like when you go there to Tennessee. Matt, you know what it's like if you go there to Tennessee. How long did it take to get Rocky Top out of your head?
Well, it took a little longer to get Jason Witten running down the middle of the field out of your head after that one. But yeah, that atmosphere, they're a different breed there, but it's kind of A&M and Tennessee, I would say, are both a little bit off. They're like always on, slightly off.
Yes, that's right. That's probably the best way to put it. Yeah. I think you're rooting for Tennessee because of the Missouri aspect of it. Because, I mean, it's okay to root for your alma mater. You can't do it when they're playing Arkansas, but you got to do it quietly.
Well, yeah, I just like Tony, so I'm not going to lie about it. I like Tony. I hope he wins.
Well, and another thing about this, I mean, I think these are the two best teams. Kentucky had the second seed. That doesn't, to me, mean that they were the second best team. You know, but in a sport that's as random as baseball and as difficult to predict as this is, I mean, look at this. I mean, I really do think these are the two best teams once the tournament started. And I know Arkansas, you know, won the division over A&M, but you could kind of see that things weren't going quite the direction that we were hoping they would. But it's kind of rare when you see literally, I think, the two best teams standing at the end of a baseball season.
Yeah, and you're right. I think they were playing real well. You looked at, Tennessee winning the SEC tournament, which a lot of times you think, well, I don't know if that's good or not because you kind of wear yourself out. But obviously, and their back was against the wall a little bit against Evansville. That Super Regionals tied 1-1. Really, all the pressure's on Tennessee, but they come through and have a big win in game three of that. So, yeah, I think it's good. Both teams went 3-0 through their bracket, so equal amount of rest. Like they'll be able to set up their pitching. You got to give the Aggies credit. You know, Braden Montgomery, one of the best players in the country, gets injured, and still they get to Omaha and have gotten to the finals. So, both have really good deep lineups. Both have good pitching. Both have good bullpens. I just hope it's a real good series because, you know, last year, I guess, LSU won 2-1, but my recollection is all the games were lopsided. And so hopefully there'll be some close, exciting games like we had, you know, the first couple of days of the College World Series where we had these one-run walk-off wins. I mean, I'm looking forward to hopefully some really good baseball.
Yeah, both teams have offenses that could really, get out ahead if you let them. But there's something about the A&M pitching staff where I'd just be surprised if that happens. It's been a couple weeks since Arkansas was eliminated from the tournament, and already 10 position players have transferred in. You get 5 junior college players. You get 5 Division I transfers. You had the shortstop, Maximus Martin, announced he's transferring in yesterday from Georgia State. This morning, TCU outfielder Logan Maxwell announced that he's transferring to Arkansas as well. And I tell you, looking at the numbers from these guys, it's exactly the way that Dave Van Horn is exactly what he said he thinks his team needed going into the next season, because there are guys that are hitting for power, but then there are also guys that aren't power hitters. They're more contact-oriented guys who get on base, who run, speed, and it looks like they're just trying to rebalance things a little bit more offensively, and they needed that this last year too.
Yeah, on paper, of course, you don't know how, like, a guy who played in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, or but a guy like Aloy comes in for Sacramento State, you know, leads Arkansas in home runs and RBIs, I believe. So, and a lot of these guys played against, you know, they may not have come from power conferences, but they played some power teams, and I think Dave and his staff do a pretty good job of evaluating players and you know, getting feedback from scouts or coaches or whoever. And I guess that's one advantage. It's the only one of not getting to Omaha is you get an early jump on the recruiting. If they were in Omaha, I know they'd be recruiting their tails off too, but you are able to get probably recruited at a higher pace if you're not playing. That's just the reality of it, so that you hopefully are in Omaha again the next year. But, yeah, it looks like Arkansas is putting together another nice class.
The main topic yesterday was Willie Mays and his life and his career and his impact on, I don't think just baseball, but on American culture mostly. And you got to use the term icon carefully, because not all the great legends, not all the Hall of Famers are icons. Willie Mays was. What did you think when you heard that he'd passed away at age 93?
Well, it was sad, obviously, and I don't know if people were aware of this. Well, he's got a nice column on today, but a lot of us got to meet Willie Mays. When I say us, I mean the Arkansas media. Back in 1989, he was working, and Mickey Mantle were both working for a casino group in Atlantic City, and Willie Mays came to Little Rock to kind of promote, you know, junkets or whatever, trips, you know, to Atlantic City to have fun gambling and stuff. And so he was there that weekend, and Wally got to show him around some and brought him to the Arkansas-Houston game. That's back when Andre, that was the year 89, Andre Ware was Heisman Trophy winner, and Arkansas won the Southwest Conference, and Quinn Grovey had a great year also, and they had a big shootout at War Memorial, and Arkansas won, I believe it was 45-39. Willie Mays was in the press box, and so we got to meet him and talk, and he couldn't have been nicer, and he was posing for pictures. And I didn't think to bring a baseball to get signed. Should have tried to fight a football, I guess. But so I thought about that one personal experience with him. And, of course, just what a great player he was. When I was a kid growing up, he was kind of on the back end of his career in the late 60s, early 70s. But, you know, I was looking at his stats. Even in 1970, I think at age 39, he hit like 28 home runs and drove in 80 runs. And the next year, it was wild. He led the league for the only time in the walks, 112 walks, 40-year-old batter, 112 walks. And so, just a guy that really could do it all in terms of great outfielder and great base runner and hitting for power, hitting for average, and just not only a great player, but super exciting and just knew how to connect with people, and you could tell how much fun he was having. For my money, the greatest player ever.
I kind of wonder, and this is something to kick around later as we go throughout the show, who is the greatest living ball player now that Willie Mays has passed on? And there's a few of them you could throw out there. You got anybody you would think would be top of the list now, still living, greatest living ball player, Bob?
Well, it probably depends on your feelings about steroids. I mean, certainly in terms of production, yeah, I think you have to put Barry Bonds up there, who I think was a Hall of Fame player without the steroids, but that's an argument for another day, maybe. But yeah, Johnny Bench, you know, probably the greatest catcher ever. Sandy Koufax, I know he didn't have he had a pretty long career, but his prime was about 5 years before he had to retire at, I think, age 30 because of arm problems. But for 5 years, he was probably the greatest pitcher ever. So I'd probably put, you know, Barry Bonds, and if you're not interested in steroids, probably Sandy Koufax and Johnny Bench. And, you know, Pete Rose, all-time hit leader and played a bunch of different positions. I'd probably put Pete Rose in that, too, although not the greatest living human, but maybe the greatest living ball player.
What about the Ryan Express? Would you put him on that list or not really?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I know some people might have known Ryan because he didn't have a super high winning percentage. But imagine if he played, for the Yankees or those real good Royals teams or Dodgers. You know, he played for a lot of so-so teams are frankly bad teams. You know, when he was with the Mets when they won it all in 69, he was just a rookie or young guy. And, yeah, you can make a case for him. I mean, just the production and the longevity. I mean, nobody's got close to 5,000 strikeouts but him. Yeah, that's a good thought. And, oh, by the way, congrats on your UA Sports Hall of Honor impending induction. I meant to say something about that. But, yeah, Nolan Ryan, I mean, there's, you know, like I say, depending on how people feel about steroids, but Roger Clemens had a great career. Derek Jeter, you know, great careers, played a premium position at shortstop. But for my thoughts, I'd probably lean towards Bench and Koufax.
You realize Nolan Ryan and Willie Mays were 1 year apart being teammates on the Mets in 72. Ryan was traded to the Angels. He started his Angels career in 72. If you can imagine a team with both Nolan Ryan, heck, not just Nolan Ryan, Tom Seaver, and Willie Mays, that might be near the top of the list, even as old as Mays was at that point. Hey, U.S. Olympic trials are starting tomorrow in Eugene. The athletic department sent the email out today. 36 athletes, either current Razorbacks or former Razorbacks, Arkansas alums, will be taking part in the U.S. Olympic team trials in Eugene. So this kind of goes along with the theme we got into a bit last week, Bob, but it's a big number. That's a lot of Razorbacks there in Eugene.
Yeah, that also includes a handful of trained here who are pros. But, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I don't have that complete list for other schools in front of me, but I have a hard time believing that any other school is taking the firepower that Arkansas is. And obviously not all those folks are going to make the Olympic team, but I think, you know, several of them will, and they're going to be competing for it for sure. If you look at the Track and Field News, which builds itself as the Bible of the sport, they do a form chart. You can find it online. I think, as a matter of fact, there's a link in that release. But there's many Razorbacks in the top 10. And, you know, it always doesn't go to form, so who they have the top three probably aren't going to be the top three in every event. But just the 400 alone, Kaylin Brown, Arkansas freshman, she has the top time in the United States. Now, that doesn't mean she's going to finish at the top of the trials and go to Paris. And Rosie Effing, who's a Razorback, has the number two time, I believe. And so, and then they obviously Amber Annie and Nakisha Price, they run for England or Great Britain and Jamaica, so they're not at the U.S. trials. But after Arkansas cleaned up in Eugene a couple of weeks ago, the women win and the men getting seventh. It's like another Razorback invasion in Oregon, and I think it's great publicity for the university and the program and Northwest Arkansas, the state of Arkansas. You know, people can say, "Wow, that really is the track capital up there or out there in Fayetteville."
Bob, appreciate your time. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll visit next week. Thanks, man.
Okay, sounds good. You guys take care.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob Holt, Democrat Gazette, with us each Thursday on Halftime. Now it's your chance to dial us up or text us on the McLarty Daniel.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hotline 877-377-6963. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hickey and Hull Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in Mena and the Little Rock area. Hickey and Hull Law Partners, specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
All guests join us on the McClarty Daniel Hotline, and joining us right now from hogsports.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, is Danny West, recruiting expert, and always great talking with you, Danny. It's been a while. How are you?
It's been too long. I'm doing great, fellas. I appreciate you having me back on with you.
Well, it doesn't look like it's already been a great day for Arkansas football recruiting yeah. because Carius Kern made his decision, and he's going to LSU. Originally committed to Arkansas and now chooses the Tigers. Is this the way you saw it going, or does this surprise you?
Yeah, pretty much. Ever since he decommitted, Phil, it looked like LSU. Matter of fact, I want to say the first few days after his decommitment from Arkansas, I think that's when you started seeing the crystal ball start to roll in for LSU, coming off of a visit down there in Baton Rouge. And, you know, it's kind of been a roller coaster with Carius a little bit. Obviously, his commitment lasted, what, 5-6 weeks? And then from there, Arkansas got him back on campus last weekend, 2 weekends ago. And he told us at the time, coming out of the Arkansas visit, I think Arkansas is back on top and probably not even going to take that trip to LSU next weekend. Lo and behold, he takes the trip anyway, and now he's committed to LSU. So you can kind of follow and see how this thing is going up and down and every which way. So that's why I say this, Phil. It's not over yet. You know, I know he committed to LSU today, and that's great. Wish him nothing but the best. But this one, fellas, is probably going to be going for a long time, and he's well worth it, in my opinion. He's Matt, he may be one of the best in-state linemen since Sean Andrews.
Oh, man,
that's a mouthful.
That's saying a lot, man.
And I know it is, but this kid's a stud now on both sides of the ball.
Man, Danny, I'm hoping we get back. What do we have to do to get back to keeping our in-state guys? I know everything's changed with NIL, but it seems like last year in football, I know if it's need, if it's our coaching that we keep change, it's, you know, position coaches change and relationships change with certain players, or if somebody kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But I think we got to get back to when we got in-state talent that can go, we got to keep it in-state. How do you think we get back to keeping all our in-state guys?
It's really tough, ain't it? You know, especially with Arkansas being a state that doesn't produce enough talent for them to be losing guys mm-hmm. like, you know, Courtney Crutchfield, Carius Kern, Marcus Wimberly now, Walker White, quarterback in last year's class, choosing Auburn. And then you look at the schools they're going to. That's the other part of it. Auburn, Missouri, LSU. Dadgum, man. I mean, that you're not just losing them, but now you got to see them too, you know, so. Boy, we could talk for an hour about this, Matt. How do they keep from doing that? You got to go win with what you've got. I think winning ultimately trumps just about everything in recruiting except NIL. NIL obviously is a big deal, and I think there's still a few shortcomings that they've got to address in that regard. But ultimately, man, I think it comes down to winning, and you know, losing has consequences. We talk about it all the time. You are coming off of a 4-8. We tried to tell you last November and October even, man, it could be a rough stretch there in the 2025 recruiting class if Pittman is retained. And sure enough, they kept him, and that's their right. You know, I still love Coach Pitt. I pull for him. I hope he wins. But I just felt like there was going to be some consequences, especially after a year like that. And now on the flip side of that, you got to go prove it. And prove that you are still going to be around for a while. And the only way to do that is to win and shut up some of these negative recruiters at other schools. Because make no mistake, guys, same kids that come to your campus are going to Missouri and LSU and A&M, and they're being told about hot seat and 4-8 and all that. That's what's got to change. And the only way to change that narrative and to get off the hot seat is to win. So that's the good news for Arkansas. There's still plenty of time. It's only June. December is not until, you know, 6-7 months away from now. So still got a chance to go out on the field and you know, quiet some of the critics in the recruiting trail.
We talked, Danny, we talked a little bit about the running backs, and there's a freshman coming in from Benton, I believe. Has your ratings changed? I guess what I'm asking is, with some of the kids that have come in and you actually got to see them in spring ball, who's kind of some of the newcomers that impressed you that you think, man, this guy's going to be playing this next year, and maybe a surprise? And then I guess that defensive end from Parkview, is he's probably going to get some playing time as well too?
Yeah, I would think so. First of all, we'll start with Braylon Russell. Matt, I think, you know, we had him as a 4-star. I felt like he was going to be pretty good, but I'll be honest with you. When he got on campus in January, I saw him for one time, and I said, man, he's too big. And I worried about his weight. And then he checked in at like 250 at one point, and I said, yeah, he's dang sure too big. And then I go out there and see him a couple of times in scrimmages, and I say, no, he's not too big. That's what he is as that type of running back. You know, you throw him out there in the flat one-on-one, he's probably trucking the guy, but he's also got a little wiggle. He can get around people too. I mean, he's not just stiff back there. So I like him at that size. And honestly, I probably like him a little better now after seeing him in spring versus the ranking, you know, this time a year ago. So Braylon's up there for me. I like the defensive backs that they signed last year, Selman Bridges, some of those guys. In the back end of the secondary, you mentioned the defensive end coming in, Charlie Collins. That's an in-state guy that they did get. You know, we often talk too much about the ones leaving the state, but they've held on to a few of these in-state linemen here lately. And Charlie, I think at some point, you know, right now he kind of looks like a freshman out there still trying to figure it out based on what we saw in the spring. But it probably won't take him too long. He's probably going to start moving up the depth chart if I had to guess. But I really like that 24 class. It was well-rounded, in my opinion. They got a little bit of everything, but I really like the secondary and some of the skill guys that they got.
Who in the secondary do you like out of this recruiting class that's on campus now?
Yeah, I talked briefly about Selman Bridges there, but I'll tell you, there's a few of them in there. Tevis Metcalf he was a 3-star younger brother of TJ Metcalf. And of course, they're both cousins of DK Metcalf. Long bloodlines going there, really strong bloodlines. Tevis comes in as a guy probably going to slide into the nickel spot, but could play safety, you know, a true safety position. I was impressed by him in the spring. Both of those guys are really physical. The Metcalf brothers, that's the first thing that jumps out to you. Probably not the most, they're not going to draw 5-star type comparisons as recruits, but they've got plenty of athleticism. But both of those guys, you can start to see them already making a move up the depth chart. And wouldn't shock me at all if both of the Metcalf brothers are on the field at the same time quite a bit this fall.
Danny, what's your feeling on Omarion Robinson from Parkview? Safety, maybe top player in the state, undecided at the moment, and judging by your reaction a moment ago, I'm not sure if you think he'll end up at Arkansas.
Well, it's going to be a tough one if they go 0-2 in this short amount of time. I mean, he's scheduled for a June 29th commitment, so what is that, 9 days out now? Obviously, he's already taken his official at Arkansas. The good news is you've got his quarterback on the commitment list already. They've taken Quentin Murphy from Parkview. They've offered 5 kids total, 4 of them for this 2025 class at Parkview, and another 2026 for next year. And Omarion, probably the biggest headlining type guy on that list, a composite 4-star safety. We've got him at about 6 foot, 175, but really a do-it-all type player for Coach Brad Boulding at Parkview. You ask me what I think, buddy. I know he's high on LSU, Oklahoma, Oregon. I think Georgia's still up there in the mix for him. But in the end, this is probably another one that's going to take quite a while. I'm trying not to avoid answering your question directly, but I do think Oklahoma and Oregon are going to be really, really tough competition for Arkansas. But, in the end, I would probably lean Arkansas. It just seems like the type of in-state, especially with that program down at Parkview, most of them end up coming around to the Hogs. So in the end, I like Arkansas, but who knows in 9 days from now what he might decide. I could see it going to Oregon or Oklahoma, but still think Arkansas is going to be in the right spot in the end.
I know there are a couple of defensive linemen that committed to Arkansas on the same day. I saw Caleb Bell is one of them. Keandre Johnson is the other. And Bell's got NFL family lines there. His dad was Kendrell Bell, linebacker at Georgia. I remember him from the Steelers. He was an NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. So he's got the DNA, that's for sure.
Yeah, and played for the Chiefs, too. You got to throw that in there. He played for the world champs. But, yeah.
I'd forgotten that part of it, Danny, yeah.
Caleb Bell, 6'3", 270. Good-looking kid. We got to meet him last week, and I think he's 57th ranked in the country, defensive lineman. That puts him at about an 88 grade overall. That's borderline four-star, so he's going to have a chance to move up throughout the course of the year. But this is one of several that Deke Adams has kind of gone to work and made quick work of in short fashion. You know, that's kind of been the trend for the defensive linemen that we've seen on Arkansas's board. They go after them maybe a month or two ago, offer them, get them on campus for an unofficial this past spring, follow up with an official here in June, and now they've stacked up two or three in a row here. Same goes for Eric Mateos on the offensive side. You've seen all three of his committed guys jump on board this month. So really been a jam-packed, action-packed month for recruiting on the line of scrimmage for both of those guys, Deke and Coach Mateos there. So I like Caleb Bell. Lot to like about all of them. But you asked me about Keandre Johnson out of Terrell, Texas as well. Not a huge guy, 6'3", 230, edge rusher type, but you know, another guy with plenty of offers and a lot to like there. So not going out and getting the four and five-star types just yet, guys, but I like what they're doing. Some of these Georgia-type defensive linemen, we've seen that work in the past. Matt, you can speak on that going way back 20, 25 years ago now. Coach Nutt used to go into Georgia and find some hidden gems. We've seen the Malcolm Shepard types and, you know, all these types through the years. Sam Olajuwon, but Butu there and Matt, played with him. A lot of those three-star types get overlooked, might be a shade or too short, or, you know, may lack 10, 20 pounds. You get those types in the program, develop them, could have a pretty good player. Now, the key is holding on to them. It seems like now you develop them and somebody else offers another 100K, and here they go. So the key is trying to get them and then hold on to them long enough to develop them.
Yeah, Coach Nutt was a great evaluator of talent, no question. And speaking of Butu, and I think about our linebacker that left to go to Ole Miss, how do you think we're going to be just at that linebacking core unit? Are we, because we're usually pretty solid. It's usually nothing I don't really ever worry about our linebackers, but I usually don't worry about our offensive line either. And we saw how that went last year. Are we going to be okay at that linebacker position?
Man, you know, I could sit here and tell you yes, but what does that really mean? I like some of what they've got right there. You know, they brought in Xavier Sory, obviously former five-star type, plenty of athletic. He's a freak. But he's still working his way into the position, too. You know, he was always a stand-up guy coming off the edge. Now he's being asked to, you know, take on a little more linebacker stand-up type responsibilities, read and react type stuff. So that's somewhat of a question mark. I love Brad Spence. I think he could be a guy that you circle right now and say, all right, he may be in for the type of breakout type season that we've seen, you know, in the last 10 years out of some of these linebackers, like a Spate, you know, Dre Greenlaw, Scooter Harris, some of these types. But I think he could be a tackle leader type. But then, man, you're going to have to rely on some of these true freshmen. And the good news is you've got some good ones coming in with Wyatt Simmons, Bradley Shaw. Neither one of those guys went through spring, so now you're trying to play catch-up going into fall camp. But, you know, Justin Logan, he was in for spring, and I think there's a lot to like about him. He's going to blow up and be a big man in a hurry if I had to guess. But they're going to have to rely on some of these freshmen, and that's a heavy ask, you know, in this league at any position, but especially at linebacker too.
Andy, just to finish on something you had hit on earlier, just why does somebody decide to go play at a certain place? You know, and for years, we would talk about guys that get guys to the NFL. We would talk about facilities, fan support, and of course, the winning that would go along with it. Now you've got NIL that's thrown into this as well. And you're talking with these kids. We're not. You know, you're talking with them. I think you have a sense of what's important to them, you know, and you said how important it is for Arkansas to win games, just as simple as that, to market yourself to the to the kids that you want to play for you that you come here and you win. I think kids want to win games. But when you talk to them, how much of a factor does it feel that NIL is? That a few extra, I don't know, a few extra $1,000, is that enough to get somebody to commit to one place over another more so than winning? Because I would think winning might trump things at times.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question, and I'll be honest with you. You'd be surprised how little it comes up in our conversations with them. Now, that's not to say they're not talking to coaches and staff members behind the scenes, but when we talk to them, they never offer up any type of, you know, signals or any type of hint that maybe that might be a deciding factor for them. But it's kind of the unspoken thing now. We just all know it, you know, and it's quite an assumption to make about somebody, but the statistics show like a lot of these guys are bouncing all over the country, and whereas they used to not do that. So what does that tell you? NIL is at play for a lot of these guys, right? But yeah, we don't talk about it too much. It hardly ever comes up, but it's always there. And you ask about numbers. Every situation is different, I would say. I mean, there's still guys out there that couldn't care less about NIL. And I think they really mean it when they say that. And, you know, they kind of back it up. They say, man, I'm going wherever's got what I want to major in, or, you know, what I'm interested in doing, or what really feels like home to me, or the NFL model, who's proven they can take my position and make them into an NFL type. There's still that type of kid that exists. I just talked to a couple weeks ago that visited Arkansas from Utah and all these places out west. They say, I don't care, you know, what they're offering me. I'm trying to go to a good school and play at the highest level. So that still exists, but boy, I hate to even put a percentage on it. I would go well over half at least are coming down to NIL at this point, which is crazy. It's why that transfer portal is filled up so often. I mean, when you're basing all of your decisions on dollar signs, it's going to catch up with you. And most of the time it happens really quickly. First 6 to 12 months into a guy's new home, he quickly realizes, man, there's more to it than an initial paycheck, you know?
Okay. So this really is the last thing. And as an avid Arkansas baseball fan, your view on Texas A&M versus Tennessee, do you pull for anybody? Do you watch it all? Or do you just act like it's not even happening?
And I'm kind of to the point now, Phil, I'm going to act like it's not even happening. I'm to the point where I just want to close my eyes. And I'll be honest with you, I was pulling for two ACC teams. I always liked Florida State and North Carolina. And I love both of their uniforms. I think there's, you know, some similarities between those programs and Arkansas, having been knocking on the door forever and not quite getting there. So those were the two I was pulling for, and now I'm just kind of, I don't even – couldn't care less. Good luck to both of them, but I probably won't be watching it.
It's a tough place to be, man. Danny, thanks so much for hopping on. It's great to talk to you again.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
Thanks, Danny.
That's Danny West, hogsports.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. And it's always great getting him on here on Halftime. If you want to react, 877-377-6963 for the McLarty Daniel Hotline. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Halftime.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here.
All guests join us on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, and with us right now is Brett Dolan. We usually get him on a Thursday. We always appreciate him. Brett Alma said we usually appreciate you coming on, but it's 100%. We always appreciate you coming on. Where have your travels taken you today?
Well, I've started my day in East Tennessee, but I made it back successfully. American Airlines decided to operate on a schedule for a rare change, so I'm back. Good to be back.
All right, good. Thoughts on the passing of Willie Mays, somebody I never got a chance to watch, never came across him, wasn't lucky enough to shake his hand or anything like that, but we all know the story of his life and his career and his impact, greatest living ball player. And your thoughts on Willie?
Yeah, probably the best, probably the greatest player. And, you think about some of the greats, and Babe Ruth was known for being a power hitter, and obviously he pitched and did some other things as well. And Ted Williams was known for being a great average hitter. And then we had others that were known for speed and defense. Really, Willie kind of did it all, and that's probably why he gets so much adulation, and rightfully so. And, Phil, I enjoy kind of going back over some of these articles that people write about him, because I feel like we're reminded something about his career or we learn something about it. But he was a guy that hit over 300 both at home and on the road. He had more than 300 homers at home and on the road. He lost a couple of years in his prime to military service. And who knows how many home runs he might have lost to Candlestick Park and the winds and whatnot, and still put up some of the greatest numbers of all time. So it's kind of sad that it happened so close to the Rickwood game tonight, just because I felt like it would have been a tremendous opportunity to honor Willie, but maybe in a sense it almost enhanced his legacy by giving him kind of a national television platform to remind some of those that didn't get to see him play or didn't get to be around him how good he was.
The couple of the guys he'd mentioned there were not known for what they did in the field, except for Ruth as a pitcher, and I'm sure he was a fine outfielder. It's just nobody really talks about that. Ted Williams was not known as a good outfielder. In fact, he probably wasn't very good in the outfield. When you talk about Willie Mays, and it's the idea that he's the best power-speed combination of all time, then add in maybe the greatest outfielder of all time, and think about what you just said about Candlestick Park's effect on his hitting. How did he, with the wins in that outfield, just continue to be an amazing center fielder? I mean, just think about the adventures he and any other outfielder at that ballpark had to deal with because of the wind.
And I won't dispute that, but I'll see you a San Francisco ballpark Candlestick, and I'll raise you the Poto Grounds. I mean, that had to be one of the hardest ballparks to play center field because of its incredible dimensions and whatnot. And I mean, I think he won 12 straight gold gloves and was probably deserving for each and every one of those. And I like the way you put it, kind of a combination of power and speed, but also a high average guy, but also an incredible defender. And then you mix in the charisma and sort of the flair that he played with that not everybody has, and it's probably why, he was the greatest living player until just a couple of days ago.
Well, and I think that's something that is worth bringing up. You take into account where Willie was born and raised, and the racism that he would have had to grow up around, and the Jim Crow laws of the South and Alabama. And look, there are a lot of players, I think, that got into the big leagues that were African-American and didn't have a chance maybe to, play earlier in their careers in the big leagues, or what then were known as the big leagues, because the Negro Leagues are now officially major leagues. Think of like a Dick Allen, Richie Allen. He was known as being a really dour sort of a person, just not very pleasant to be around. Other guys, they were bitter about that sort of treatment. And I don't think Willie ever was like that. I mean, he wasn't just known for what he did on the field. It's the smile, too. It's the say hey. And I think that's also worth bringing up.
And I think that's why we kind of immortalized some players. I mean, it's in part why we love Babe Ruth, because there was a personality with him, in addition to probably being the greatest power hitter. And Willie had the charisma. And I think Ted Klusiewski, the big strapping power hitter for the Reds, had a great line where he said, I don't know what the hell charisma is, but I'm guessing it's Willie Mays, is how he put it. And you know, there was this not just flair on the field, but I think a joy off the field. And the other greatest, I think the greatest quote I heard about Willie the other day is he made young kids feel like they were old, and they made old guys feel like they were kids again, just watching his joy and his spirit. And I really didn't get a chance to sit and talk to Willie much, but a couple of times I was able to sit down with Monty Irvin and talk to him about Willie, because Monty was kind of the guy who was his mentor when he got to the big leagues with the Giants, and just ask him about Willie's greatness. And those are, you know, those are memories that I'll always cherish, because those opportunities don't come around very often.
You ever make it to Rickwood? You got the Rickwood Classic in Birmingham tonight. Giants, Cardinals, oldest operating baseball park still in existence in the United States. And they've played one minor league game a year there for, gosh, I think like 30 years or so. Never a major league game until tonight. I try to go there every time we go to Hoover for the SEC tournament. It's like a pilgrimage. It is that cool of a place. You ever made it there?
Twice, but I wish I could go for a game, or I had been there for one of those minor league games that you mentioned. A couple of times that I'm driving through, I took my son. Once we got in and walked on the field, another time they were renovating it, so we just stopped and took some pictures and didn't get inside. But it does kind of feel like a museum, though, doesn't it? Like walking back into time from a baseball standpoint?
Absolutely. It really does. One of the things that always blew me away is that, and maybe you'll be able to tell on the telecast tonight, is that the original dimensions of that ballpark, I don't know how anybody ever hit a ball out of that ballpark. Truthfully, it was like 480 feet to center field. In fact, I think, I might be wrong about this, but I think, and it's kind of ironic how this works out. I'd have to double check about this, but I think Vic Wirtz might have been one of the only players to ever hit a ball over the center field fence there. And of course, he's famous for hitting the ball that Willie Mays made the famous catch in the 54 series. So, yeah.
That would be something.
That would be, wouldn't it? That would be. Hey, no surprise, Tennessee and A&M in the College World Series finals. I don't know who's going to win this. I sort of lean towards A&M. I like their pitching a little bit better. Where do you go here?
I would probably lean Tennessee, but I certainly wouldn't argue a lot with you. You know, it's funny, I think it was a week ago in this conversation, we were kind of breaking down the brackets, and you said it best, because we were looking at the two teams that could emerge, and we thought A&M was good enough. We were a little bit concerned about some of the injuries, a weekend starter, and certainly one of the best offensive players in baseball. And then we just kind of said, well, Tennessee will win the ACC portion of the bracket, which they did, although that first game was concerning with Florida State. But here they are, and they're right back at it. So I have not been able to watch as much of the College World Series as I would like. I think I will dial in for these two or three games just because I think it's two really good teams. It's not just two teams that are playing great baseball now, but I think they're really good teams. And I don't know about you, Phil. I had a couple of thoughts at the end of last year on Arkansas's season, and I think this College World Series has helped me kind of put them into perspective. I was wondering if maybe when Arkansas lost the regional, if I was too much of an SEC homer, if I saw things through the SEC teams ranked highly and their players and didn't give the ACC enough credit, or even the Big 12. And then I wonder, too, if maybe after Arkansas's offensive struggles that I felt like, you know, maybe it's a time to reevaluate that you need more of a Kentucky-type approach in not impacting baseballs and thinking about doing damage and home runs. And after watching this play out, the SEC is the best, and I still think the best way to get to the finals is to have great hitters doing damage, and I think it kind of reinforced both of those theories watching these two teams get to this point where they're going to play for a championship.
SEC is 17-3 in the College World Series against any other conference in the last 3 years. Arkansas is a part of that because they have a win over Stanford in that time. So, yeah, it isn't even close. As good as North Carolina, as NC State were, Florida State, not even close. And looking at the players that have announced their transfer into the Razorback program, Brett, I think they are trying to rebalance things a little bit more. There's guys in this group. There's 10 position players, 5 out of junior college, 5 from Division I, and I'm sure there's more on the way. There's some that hit for power. There are some that focus more on getting on base, you know, on base percentages over 420. They steal some bases, more walks than strikeouts. The junior college guys, you know, there's a couple of speed guys. There's speed and power guys, too. It really does look like they're trying to rebalance the offense a little bit more. But then when I think about it, I also think that the team that they constructed this last year, I think they tried to do the same thing in some cases. It's just you didn't get the sort of production that was expected from guys that had produced in the SEC previously. So, I mean, you can build a team based on what somebody had done the year before. It doesn't always work out that way.
I think you're right. I think there were just a couple of guys who didn't have the years that we maybe anticipated them having based on previous success in this league. Now, having said that, I would agree with you. It feels like Arkansas has gone out and they've almost done exactly what Dave teased or mentioned in his last press conference. They want more athleticism. They want a little different type of player. Now, I will say this. It does feel like most of those guys that have the ability to steal bases and hit doubles also hit home runs. So it feels like they're trying to get guys that can really, again, do damage. You know, you don't have to be a singles hitter with stealing bases, but you do have to kind of hit some doubles, and you do have to be able to hit the ball over the ballpark. So I don't know if it's necessarily them kind of overreacting a lot and changing their entire philosophy, but they do want to get some better players because, you know, no offense whatsoever to this year's team, it just didn't have maybe the caliber of position players or at least the production than they had in previous years when they were making deeper runs. So that's always the challenge for these coaches, to go out and not overreact too much to last year, but also learn something and kind of build a little bit differently. And it does feel like they are kind of taking that approach in a slightly different way.
All right, last thing. We got the draft, the Major League Baseball draft next month. If I had the first overall pick, if it was my choice, I'm going with Jack Caglione. And only for a hitter. I wouldn't want him to pitch. I want a left-handed hitting first baseman who can take a pitch that's outside and drive it over the right field fence, who doesn't swing and miss very much, who can play the position and move around a lot. And that's, I'm not saying Charlie Condon can't do that. Not to say Travis Pezzana is not going to be a star. It just feels weird to take a second baseman first overall. Go ahead and take a first baseman who can rake and set the Florida record for home runs. I'd go with Caglione first overall. What do you think?
I would be intrigued with that. Now, I think what's going to be interesting is it's Cleveland and Cincinnati, so you might have the possibility of a team wanting to do what Baltimore did with Kerstedt a couple of years ago, where he was kind of in that 6-7 range but was willing to take a little less to help out the overall draft dollar figure and be selected second and get that honor. But I'm glad you brought up Caglione, because I mentioned the two things that I felt like it kind of reaffirmed for me in this College World Series. One, the SEC is really good, and B, I think you also need to be able to thump and hit home runs. To me, if I had to ask what, or throw out one other thing, it's that Caglione has to be one of the three best players in college baseball.
Yeah.
I said it when Florida came through, Phil. I mean, DVH walked in four times in one game, or one day in two games, and one time that they couldn't walk him. He hits a grand slam and wins a game, and without that win, I'm not sure they even get in the darn regionals. He has that much of an impact on baseball. He has to be one of the three best players, and I don't know if Hagen got his spot for the Golden Spikes finalist, or maybe Bazana did instead, so it wasn't an all-SEC range. But this guy impacts games differently than anybody else. Every couple of innings, you have to think, when is he coming up? Which pitcher do you want to face him? How do we face him without guys on base? He's that good, and I certainly think he deserves to be in the top two or three picks in the draft with the Condon, with the Bazan, and maybe Hagen's in that mix as well, because, my goodness, he just he has kind of a Bonds-type presence over these college games, and he, quite frankly, Florida would have been nowhere near where they finished without him and his production.
Brett, enjoy these visits. Thank you so much. We'll visit again next week.
See you next week.
Brett Dolan with us on the McClarty Daniel Hotline.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.